Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Many LDS folk would love to have an outside perspective on the Book of Mormon. I'm excited to announce that we've got a New Testament scholar from the Pentecostal Theological Seminary in Cleveland, Tennessee, on the show. Dr. Christopher Thomas has written an amazing book, A Pentecostal Reads the Book of Mormon. So if you really want to enhance your scripture study from an outsider perspective, this is an awesome book, so I encourage you to check it out. We're going to get the Bible treatment for the Book of Mormon and see what a Bible scholar thinks about Book of Mormon theology. So you won't want to miss this episode. Check it out. Well, welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm excited to have an Ivy Leaguer on the show. We don't get too many of those. Could you go ahead and tell us who you are?
I'm Dr. Chris Thomas, and I am glad to be on Gospel Tangents with my friend Rick Bennett.
All right. And you've written an amazing book. Why don't you show us the book here? Tell us about it.
Oh, it's as the title says, A Pentecostal Reads the Book of Mormon. Uh-huh. And it's got several sections to it, but I read it mainly as I tend to read biblical texts. And so there we are.
There we are. So we got the Bible treatment on the Book of Mormon. That's going
to
be exciting.
There you go. It's a good way to put it.
So now I mentioned you were an Ivy Leaguer. Let's get your academic background. Where'd you get your bachelor's and master's and PhD and all that?
I did a BA at Lee College, a little school in Cleveland, Tennessee. Then I did a Master's of Arts at the seminary I now teach at. It had a different name in those days, but it's now the Pentecostal Theological Seminary. And I did a Master of Divinity at Ashland Seminary in Ohio, a Brethren school. I did a Master of Theology at Princeton Seminary.
Wow.
And did a PhD at the University of Sheffield. And in England, and recently I've been honored with a Doctor of Divinity for my published work by Bangor University in Wales. So I actually have more degrees than a thermometer.
That's awesome. So Princeton, the Princeton Tigers. And, you know, I think a lot of times when we think of Ivy League, we don't think of Princeton. But that's definitely a big school. Can you tell us a little bit more about your time there at Princeton?
Well, I was at the seminary, which joins the university campus, and I got to study with probably the leading text critic in New Testament studies at the time, a guy named Bruce Metzger.
Oh.
We really love Princeton. It's a beautiful university town. We first came in, we crossed a bridge, and you saw the rowers rowing down the river.
Oh, really?
From the university. We got to go to a couple of the Princeton football games. They would usually send some tickets over to the seminary. And so we got to see one of Don Shula's sons play with Dartmouth.
Oh, really?
He was a receiver in those days, and I can't remember which one it was. But one of the funny things was they had bands to perform at halftime. But there were no uniforms. It looks like everybody that had skills just went out and they played. And so it was really, really low-key, really enjoyable.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Now, Jeremy Lin, he was on the basketball team. He wasn't there during your time,
I guess. No, nor was Bill Bradley.
Okay, that's right.
Bill Unfortunately.
Bradley. Senator Bradley.
That's right.
Yeah, he played for the Knicks. So, well, cool. So, So what on earth possessed a Pentecostal to read the Book of Mormon?
Well, as you know, it's a long story. So this will be a mini-series if I tell you the whole thing. When I was in college, a sophomore, I was part of a choir that toured the United States in January, a mini-term.
Mm-hmm.
We came through Salt Lake. And
oh, wow.
As musicians, of course, we were pretty wowed by the tabernacle and the acoustic demonstration, you know, the old dropping of the pen. And going through the visitor center, they gave me a copy of the Book of Mormon, the blue, iconic blue cover with the gold Moroni on the front.
Mm-hmm.
And sometime later, maybe that autumn, there was a guy who passed through the college where I was attending who had a ministry to Mormons, though I don't know that Mormons would necessarily feel like it was a ministry to them. And he had written lots of little pamphlets, lots of little booklets. One of them that I remember is was entitled 35 Mormons and One Baptist Preacher, which was his diary, actually, of one of those church history study groups that went all over the United States, and he enrolled at BYU in that course. And I remember seeing all the, being impressed by the different places that he described, Nauvoo, of course, being one of those. And then probably a year or two later, they were the church was trying to establish a church in our little town. I think they were part of the folk who were LDS, had to go down to Cleveland, about a 30-minute trip to attend church. And I became friends with a couple of elders who were in Athens. And we would meet weekly.
This is Cleveland, Tennessee.
Cleveland, Tennessee.
Athens, Tennessee as
That's
well.
Right. That's okay, exactly right. Sure. Thanks for that clarification. We've had seminary students be in the Cleveland, Ohio airport and call and say, can somebody pick me up at the airport? And we're like, man, we got bad news for you. So we became good friends. A guy named Steve Christensen, not the one of Hoffman fame.
Okay, I was going to say.
And Norm Levitt. Steve was from Salt Lake. Norm was from the L.A. area. And we would meet every week. They would ask me questions about the Bible. I would ask them questions about the Book of Mormon. We would take a week to do our homework, come back together. And we met for a good while. In retrospect, I didn't realize how much they owed me to have a place to go every week, to have a place they're not getting heckled, right? And we often had them over for meals. And so anyway, at some point, whoever their superiors were told them they couldn't continue to talk with me because the questions were getting more and more troubling. And I said, well, I'm sorry to hear that, but I understand. And they said, but you know, we get Mondays off and we can kind of do what we want to on Mondays.
Oh, wow.
So we kept meeting. And in fact, one day they were helping us remodel our church. We had to tear off the front porch because we were widening the sanctuary. Mm-hmm. We're way up on the roof and, laboriously taking pieces of wood and shingles and such and throwing them down into the area for the waste. And I said, now, lads, today when you go home, you can write in your proselyting manual, tore down one Church of God. And they, of course, thought that was great. Then we afterwards went over to the house and had a meal together. When I went to seminary in Ohio at Ashland is kind of just south of Akron, kind of between Akron and Columbus.
Okay, in Ohio this time.
Yeah, in Ohio this time, about an hour from Cleveland, okay. Ohio. Uh-huh. I decided I wanted to kind of hear the story from the LDS side of the fence, not just my old mentor, John L. Smith, accurately named. And so I wound up taking what they used to call a home study course through BYU on Joseph Smith and the Restoration. Ivan K. Barrett wrote the textbook. And so it began, with Smith's early years, his birth, I think, and it went through the Exodus across the Mississippi. I sometimes tell people you could see the tail lights on the back of the wagons as they were crossing the Mississippi. And my seminary professor, church history professor, used it as the basis of a directed study. So I actually got 3 hours of graduate credit on LDS history.
Oh, wow.
through that experience. After that, I read various things, that would come along. Read most of the Smith biographies. Read a biography of Brigham Young by Leonard Arrington. Wasn't terribly impressed with it. He didn't ask the questions that I had as I was reading along. Years later, I would repent for any bad feelings I had toward Harrington, because I learned that he was quite the historian and worked under duress, as it were. But I'd kind of put it on the shelf, and John Turner from George Mason, he's at George Mason now, wrote this, what I consider a magnificent biography of Brigham Young. And I managed to meet John and talk with him some. I had a sabbatic coming. I think it was when I was turning 60. And I had a sabbatic coming, and I thought, you know, I'm gonna close the loop on this. I think I'm gonna try to do a graduate level reading course on the Book of Mormon. And so BYU wasn't quite set up for that, and I wound up doing it at Community of Christ.
Oh.
With a guy named Del Luffman, who was an apostle, but had just written a book on the Book of Mormon. And somewhere between setting up the course and making my way to Independence for a week, I knew what I was supposed to do, and that was to write a book. It started out as like a 150-page short introduction and grew. I'm not very good at short short things. And but the trip to Independence was amazing. The printer's manuscript was still there in those days. I had access to that.
I think your book is actually longer than the Book of Mormon. Is that about right?
Well, I would like to say it's more interesting, but it's sort of a Reader's Digest version in that section.
Uh-huh.
And so had a great experience there. They brought out various artifacts: Emma's wedding band, Joseph's Bible, a seer stone, mm-hmm. which there were lots of fights over who's got the real seer stone.
But oh,
yeah. I've seen that one. And so, you know, in my academic life, I've always had the blessing of feeling a sense of call to my major research projects.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt the same thing with this project. And when I tell my LDS friends that, they get the look in their eye like Aslan is on the move, right? And I tell my Pentecostal friends that, and they say, God told you what? So that's the kind of condensed answer to a very straightforward question.
Well, you know, that's good, because the question that I want to ask you is, you know, I would assume that some of your Pentecostal friends would be pretty suspicious about this. And you know, are you a heretic? Is that right?
Well, those are two different questions, really. Well, it's been amazing, actually, Rick, how many people kind of turn up and say, you know, my uncle's LDS, or my aunt is Community of Christ.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, when I started, I went to see our presiding bishop and said, I'm going to start some research that I wanted to give you a heads up on. I didn't want you to get caught flat-footed. And I said it could prove to be a bit controversial. And so I told him what I was going to do. And he said, well, what's the controversial part? And I said, you know what the controversial part is. And a similar conversation with the president of the seminary, just so that they knew what was going on. And
Could you have been run out of the seminary, the own seminary that you teach at, over this?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, we, you know, the missiology professors do world religions, so, you know, I wouldn't think.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if I converted, I could lose my job. But no, it's been it's gone a bit under the radar. For one thing, I'm not a real publicity hound, you might say. I'm not on social media at all. And so I think most are just kind of curious, don't quite understand what it is. And so I lay out the sort of the journey in the preface to the book, so that, you know, so that people get a sense of what's going on there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Yeah.
So you never really had any problems with from your leaders about whether this was going to be too controversial? I mean, there had to be some, I would expect.
Well, I haven't. I mean, you know, maybe gospel tangents will change all that.
But
no, I haven't. I mean, I've been at the seminary full time since 82.
Okay.
So I have a bit of a track record, and in our denomination, we haven't had an overflow of academic scholars. We've, and so often we would get consulted about where the lines should get drawn, right? And we had a guy in the church who, in our denomination, who had did a lot of witnessing to Mormons to try to convert them, and we had actually been classmates, and he was one of the people I talked to let him know what I was up to, just so he would know. His response was real affirming and positive, and so and what I'm doing for the most part is much more academic than kind of things at the popular level. I mean, the book is relatively straightforward and easy to understand, but people tend to be, with other religious traditions, they're either drawn to it to try to talk about what the differences are, and I'm really kind of a textually based person, and I know how to read texts, and so there's a lot of ways in which, the Book of Mormon text is what I'm interested in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to Grant Hardy once, and he said, "So Book of Mormon, why not Mormonism?" And I said, "Are you nuts? Mormonism is huge. I think I can deal with the text, but so that kind of focus means that my interests are not necessarily what some other people's interests are."
Yeah. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Christopher Thomas. In our next conversation, we'll hear what Chris thinks about the idea of where LDS people tell the same Book of Mormon stories over and over.
On one occasion, and I said, it's like you had a meeting here in Salt Lake and said, "We're only going to talk about 7 stories out of the Book of Mormon. And if I hear of the 2,000 stripling warriors one more time, I'm going to pull my hair out," right? Because it was a real kind of select thing that you normally got, and I was actually interested in what's in it.
Right. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.